To paraphrase Sir Richard Attenborough, this, for the very first time, is the Radio Today Roundtable.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Courtesy of Jonty and Nick, we're at Jazz FM, which is nice, really, because it's just around the corner from where we used to do something a bit like this at the Radio Academy and call it Radio Talk. It's the same kind of thing. We're going to shoot the breeze and chew the fat with people who love to talk about radio, and they are...
My name is Matt Deegan. I'm the creative director of Folder Media, which is a new media and radio consultancy, and I also run the children's radio station Fun Kids.
And I'm Brett Spencer. I'm digital editor for the BBC's music radio networks.
And we're going to talk about the ARIAs, the APAs, a few other bits and bobs, but I'd like to start with Rajar. Matt, you blog extensively and very well, I think, always about Rajar, which means that you do the number crunching so we don't have to.
Yes.
Pick out a couple of the major points from this one.
I think with Rajar, you always have to remember that the trend is your friend and that snapshots of quarters aren't always amazingly useful. And I think one of the things you can look at in the last book is both Radio 1 and Radio 2 breakfast shows took a bit of a drop. I think actually that's more about summer holidays than it is about the guest lineup for those months. And if you look at radio as a whole, and London in particular, it's not been a great quarter, but it's probably all a bit seasonal, really. And I think one of the things we are seeing, and this kind of affects everyone, really, Rajar works incredibly well, particularly for the large national radio stations. The smaller you get, there are things in place to try and balance that. So if you're a small radio station in the northeast and you've got a TSA of 100,000, you roll your data for a year, which gives you a bigger sample size. And as we start to add in more digital stations or more niche stations, it just means that the data is going to kind of ping around a little bit more. And I think we started to see a little bit of that. So for someone like Virgin Radio and Talk Radio, you know, you look at Talk Radio and go, oh, good quarter, has gone up a bit, probably deserved as people gradually get a bit more used to it. But then Virgin Radio, on the other hand, has sort of gone the other way. And I don't think that's because people had listened and they're not listening now. I think it would just take a little while for that to shake out. I think what is interesting, again, is some of the digital data. So 45% share of all radio listening now are to digital platforms, so DAB, DTV and the internet. And if your radio station is not really in that place, you've got to worry, because it just means it's going to be harder for you to maintain your audience, let alone grow it. But some good figures, I think best ever figures for Six Music. Kistory went the number one digital radio station, which is, you know, it's a brilliant format. In the same way, Absolute 80s is a brilliant format and has been leading that. I think there is something new in something that's more than just presenters. Historically, obviously, strong presenters have done well out of Rajar. Actually, strong formats that capture a part of your listening. You know, I don't need Kistory to be my number one radio station, but if it does the job that I want it to do when I turn it on, then I think it's going to do well. And you see that with a lot of other digital formats too.
Can we finally put to bed the question, is consolidation in commercial radio into national brands a good idea or a bad idea?
I think putting it to bed is probably a bit hopeful. But you look at what Heart and Capital have done particularly, they have consolidated their audiences. In if you look back in old money, the Trent FMs and those sorts of ones, even when I used to work there in Leicester Square at the beginning of the century, what you saw was that some stations just underperformed what they kind of should have done, and some overperformed. So, you know, Trent FM always did very well. So in a consolidated world, is that evened out a little bit? Probably. But where it has given the power is for the spin-offs. So they've banked all their existing audience, but, you know, Heart Extra straight in with, I think, 600,000 odd listeners, you know, Smooth Extra's around a million. By consolidating, they've managed to create platforms where they can grow those brands and grow the total hours or the total reach of that brand. I think Heart Network is now just below 10 million, and I think just only a little bit below Radio 1. And like even 5 years ago, to say, could we have a commercial network that was as big as Radio 1, you never would have seen. And the consolidation has led to that.
Brett, good news for the digital stations. I mean, we've launched a lot more in the last year. They all seem to have had some kind of impact, but the biggest impact of all, I guess, is that there is just more choice.
Absolutely, and we should mention, to spare Matt's blasters, we should mention that Fun Kids did very well nationally in its first radio, and it's good to see Chris Country doing very well. I think it had 35,000 in London alone, a lot more across the country. But yeah, there is much more choice. People talk about a platinum age for television. Actually, coming here today and just writing down a few things that I was enjoying listening to, I had a list of about a dozen things, all of which were new as well. So yeah, we're living in good times where there's a huge amount of choice for people to take
What are people talking about at the BBC? In terms of radars,
The radio performance generally across the network is very strong. Radio 1 was back up to nearly 10 million, which is good. Radio 2 maintaining its over 15 million. 5 Live back up again. So the performance was pretty positive, I think.
Of course, Ben Cooper always likes radio and approves of it when Radio 1's figures go up, but when they go down, he usually says that actually it's a very old-fashioned way of rating the audience.
Well, also, it's very difficult for Radio 1 because their reach is now so massive across so many different platforms. You know, whether you're talking about the YouTube channel, the Radio 1 iPlayer channel, the reach across social is enormous. So it's hard to measure Radio 1 just via radar when their reach is so massive across so many different places in digital spaces, because that's the way the audience are consuming Radio 1.
I think that's true to a certain degree. I think, obviously, everyone, when they have has a slightly poorer radar, there are some other things that we do that are very good. I think the challenge that they face is primarily their radio network. You know, their service license is that they're a radio network, and they have to deliver on that for license fee payers. I'm always surprised they don't actually bring together Radio 1 and 1 Extra as a combined audience. That's what I would probably do, because they're making two great radio stations that are reaching still quite a lot of people, to maybe talk about that. But it is a challenge, though not one you could say. I don't think it's a 15. So sometimes it's described as a 15-24 challenge, and that, oh, those bloody kids aren't listening to the radio anymore. What a pain that is. It's not about us. And it's like, to a certain degree, I think ours, young people listen to less radio because they've got some other things that they would like to do. Reach is still fairly solid for 15 to 24s. And so, yes, I could agree for an hour's decline, but there's no necessarily a reason why they shouldn't be pushing for that reach figure to go up.
Quick nod in the direction of LBC, or a very good book.
LBC, a great book in London, particularly in both London and nationally. I mean, I think even the LBC news service, which is the kind of AM service, I think has a bigger audience, or is very close to BBC London. And like, that's got to be a bit annoying. But again, there's the thing about format. You know, because you would.
This is, just to be clear, this is not the main LBC.
No.
This is the man in a wardrobe.
Yeah,
well, LBC.
But what I would, to praise the cupboard where it comes from. Have you had a listen to LBC News recently?
I have.
It's quite good.
It's all right, isn't it?
And also, I think back to this whole presenter format thing. It's a format. Like, if you want 20 minutes of headlines and packages, and they're quite good packages that come from all the global stations, it's not a bad listen.
And we should mention also Six Music record reach yet again. I think nearly up at 2.4, just under 2.4 million now. And I've been there long enough to remember when sort of we were reaching for the 2 million. So it's fantastic to see that continuing to grow.
Let's just also have a word about our hosts today, Jazz FM. I've been guilty, as I so often am, of prejudice through ignorance. I've been saying for ages that they don't play any jazz music. But you know what? They do.
They do, yeah.
And they've changed quite a lot in the last couple of years, haven't they? And I listened, on my way in today, I'm hearing Miles Davis tunes. This is all very promising. And the figures are holding up.
But again, I think this is about looking at old Jazz FM when it was on FM. What did it have to do? It had to kind of go to the mainstream and put all the smooth stuff in to try and capture an audience. That obviously then evolved into Smooth FM under GMG. But actually, if you're launching or running a digital radio station where your name describes what you do and that there is a targeted group of people that want to hear it, doing a Ron Seal and doing what your name says is probably not a bad idea.
Well, to celebrate this, at the very end of this podcast, we're going to play a piece of jazz, and I've asked the experts here at Jazz FM to choose it.
It's on record. We haven't actually got to play it ourselves. We're not playing jazz, are we?
No, I think it'll be off gramophone record.
That's a relief then, because I haven't rehearsed.
My slap bass is poor.
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about awards. We'll maybe touch on the APAs, the formerly RPAs, and their nominations. But first, the ARIAs. You didn't go, Matt. Mm. You did go, Brett, and won something. So congratulations.
Radio 2 was Station of the Year, and Radio 2 Country that I worked on got a silver for digital innovation. I thought it was a fantastic show, actually. I thought it was a really modern show for 2016. We weren't sitting in a hotel in a dinner jacket eating a meal for 5 hours. It was, you know, it was a couple of hours. It felt very modern. Sarah Cox was fantastic and should be the permanent host of that show. There were good acts playing. We went through 15, 16 awards quite quickly, and everyone seemed to have a really good time. And it was busy. I think they said there were 1,500 people there. They cleverly made the first direct arena look quite small by sort of packaging it all in. And it was a good night. It was a good show.
Of course, if you weren't in Leeds, you could be forgiven for not knowing it had happened, because there was very little press coverage compared with the old Sonys. Now, you didn't go, Matt. What was your impression of it?
Well, I kind of, having a bit of an eye on Twitter and seeing it pop up, it seemed everyone had a lovely time. Was a good show. I think it'd be great to demonstrate that by streaming it or putting some video up so people can see what it was like, because it seemed fun. What did the punters feel like? Because real people could come in as well.
I wasn't aware of there being...
Oh, there's a lot of real students.
I think there were a lot of students there. I think the difficult thing with the publicity that you mentioned there is that when you've not done it for a couple of years, and then you bring it back, and then you change the name, and then you put it in Leeds, you've got quite a lot of hurdles to overcome there. And this felt like a good starting base again to make it something bigger, as it were.
I should just mention, by the way, there were students either side of the main block of radio people who were sat in the middle. And there was this wonderful moment when Rick Astley came on and the whole of the middle block stood up and started cavorting in a very dad-dancing kind of way. And if you looked to the left and right, the students were looking at each other thinking, what the hell is going on? Who is this old man? Is it important to win an ARIA, Brett?
I think if you're in production, you don't get many opportunities to win something or be nominated or have your work recognised. If you're a presenter, there's probably a lot more opportunities to do that. But I think if you're behind the scenes, there are few and far between. I would actually like to have seen more categories. Now, I know that we used to say there's far too many categories, but I think it would have been nice to have a few more things, particularly that commercial radio could have won, because it was quite BBC heavy. And I'd like to have seen a few more awards.
I think they possibly should have had more that independent production companies could have won as well. I mean, in the sort of feature documentary kind of
area. I think it's difficult because, as we know, one of the big radio groups didn't enter, which trims out a load of really high-quality radio that should have been award-winning, which left it with only one commercial radio station winning a gold, which is embarrassing, really, for everyone, both for commercial radio but also for the ceremony. And I don't think this is their fault. I think they did a good job with everything, and it's hard to work it out. I think if you look at the categories, I think a lot of those categories are obvious categories and things we've seen for a long time, but they sort of represent a radio that doesn't really exist anymore, would be my view. So if you've got, you know, a category like Best Sport, sports should get an award. I totally see why that is. And 10, 15 years ago, every ILR station probably had a sports show. Guess what? Pretty much no ILR station has a sports show now. So, you know, what's the equivalent of that? So, you know, what used to be sport, which everyone did. Well, what's something that everyone else does now? Is it community? Is it social action? Is it something that every station, even if you're a Heart South Coast station, which has a local breakfast and drive, what do they have that can be awarded, but also that a BBC local radio station could enter?
Okay, let's talk about the APAs. Oddly, we've got history repeating itself a bit here, because we had your conference, Next Radio, followed immediately by the Radio Festival.
There was another one?
Which was also a one-day event in London. And now we've had the ARIAs, and we're very soon going to have the APAs. And these, of course, are the Radio Independence Group's awards, sponsored now by Audible, which is why the A is in there now. These are for people rather than programmes, although it's difficult sometimes when you look at the current categories to see the difference. From your perspective, Brett, where do they fit into the calendar and the kind of radio world?
I'm not sure, but it's, you know, we've got that, and we've got the I'm trying to think of the name of the commercial radio one.
Yes,
the Archivers.
The Archivers, and it would be great if everyone could come together and just have one award ceremony, which was the best of radio. It's a little bit like boxing titles. There's like three heavyweight champions, so it'd be nice if everyone came together and could agree on one award ceremony.
Maybe an award season, like they have the Oscars and the Golden Globes. Yeah. Maybe we see the radio award season. What I like about this is it is individuals. I think often radio production, particularly on a docs level, even on a small show level, is a couple of people or a single person. And so to have something to recognise that skill and craft, I think, is good. And I know that, you know, for us, our company Folder, we make some docs and with freelancers, and those that entered through us were very excited to put their work together and want to be judged by their peers.
I'm assuming for you guys, if you're an independent company and you're winning awards, those awards then have some commercial value when you're pitching for other things.
I think you'd
like to think that, although in my experience, the more awards you get, the fewer commissions you get. Is that just me?
There's always the curse of an award. I always liked to the Sonys when, you know, and these five shows, two have been axed, and that person's now in jail, those people.
You're not meant to carry the awards around with you, Trevor, like you do, though. Just put them on the table all the time.
It's like the Premier League Manager of the Month, isn't it? Or the, you know, it's the kiss of death. You know they're going to be sacked very shortly. Let's listen to a very new radio station. Here's a clip from something launched this week.
Celebrating the sausage.
On air.
This is Sausage FM.
Yes, hello and welcome to Sausage FM, the only radio station out.
Well, Matt, what do you make of that? That's a sausage FM, putting the sizzle back into radio.
I just feel sorry for poor JB from JLS, whose agent has made him front Sausage FM. Also, can we have a banning on calling a 45-minute sound file on from SoundCloud a radio station? Or is that just me being particularly grumpy?
More seriously, BBC Jazz is back. This is not one of your digital pop-ups, Brett, but it's the one where the BBC and Jazz FM are working together. I thought it was just a one-off last year, but you're doing it again.
It's coming back. It's coming back on the 10th of November, broadcasting for 96 hours straight. The pop-ups normally sort of start and finish each day. Huge range of programming. Will Young, Stuart Lee among the presenters, Jay Rayner. And you'll hear some of that programming repeated on Jazz FM, which is where we are at the moment. And you'll hear Jazz FM presenters on that network. So it's an interesting collaboration between Jazz FM and the BBC and the London Jazz Festival, and encouraging people to once again listen on digital platforms and listen in perhaps online in a way they haven't done before. And it's quite a unique collaboration for the BBC.
Was that the point of the River of Music that Radio 3 did last weekend, where they had 12 hours of music and all the links were online? Do you know about this? Oh, because you only do popular music.
I only do popular music.
That's what it'll be. Did you hear any of that, Matt?
I didn't know.
I better cut that bit out then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure, it was lovely, though.
Let's talk about your boss. Bob Shannon, Brett, is now going to be director of radio and not controller of Radio 2 as well. So he's actually shedding a job, which is not his way. Normally he aggregates them, doesn't he? Good choice for the BBC?
Well, I personally think it's a fantastic choice for the BBC. You know, I've worked with Bob for most of my BBC career, and he's a fantastically creative leader. He's a brilliant manager, and I think he'll be a terrific director of radio.
Matt?
I think it's a great choice. I mean, I haven't heard anybody say that's a bad choice, and normally radio industry is more than happy to give anybody a kick in. I think he did a good job at Five Live. He's doing an annoyingly good job at Radio 2, what with it being Europe's most popular radio station with all of the listeners. So that person to run the network would seem a good thing. Interesting to see what they do with Radio 2 and who would do that. Is there going to be a bit of a shuffle round of controllers? I would hope that there was, and whichever networks, it kind of brings kind of new people in, and I think that'd be fun.
It's hard to recruit new people now, though, at the BBC, isn't it? At a time of shrinking budgets.
Which is a shame, I think.
You don't have to comment on that.
I genuinely don't know what's going to happen in terms of the structure of the networks now, Trevor, before you ask me. And if I did know, I wouldn't tell you.
Thank you very much. You're the kind of man they're looking for. OK, let's move on, as we shall, at the end of each of these monthly roundtables, to asking our panellists what they've been listening to. Who wants to go first? Matt, I think.
Two things. The Axe Files. Are you aware of the Axe Files?
I'm not, no. Is this something to do with Axminster?
Sadly not. Or Axminster Carpets, which stays in my mind from listening to 2CR too long ago. But Axe Files is David Axelrod, who was one of Obama's team that got him elected twice and then worked in the White House. He now is a kind of university lecturer or runs the politics department at a big American university, and he does a frequent podcast where it's him and a notable political figure, Republican and Democrat. So he was a Democrat, so Republican and Democrat, sometimes media figures as well. Mitt Romney was on. So if you've got an interest in American politics, really different side. So probably like a lot of people listening more on perhaps the Democratic side than the Republican side. But hearing Mitt Romney speak about his career, how he got to doing what he was doing, absolutely fascinating. If you like American politics, check out the Axe Files. And then the other thing, which is other ends of the spectrum, we try and flick around all the stations in the office, and we had Heat Radio on the other week. James Barr does mid-mornings on Heat Radio and personifies that brand. I think I couldn't really name you many other radio presenters who, in style and delivery and connection to the audience, is sort of so spot on for that.
Thank you. Brett?
I've also picked something related to the US election, funnily enough, which is Rich Hall's Election Breakdown on Radio 4. I struggle a bit sometimes with built radio comedy programmes, but this is a really good, I think it's 4 weeks, there have been two and two to come. And he did a play in London a few years ago where he played a sort of radio talk show host taking calls. And it's quite similar to that, but it's all about the US election. And that's on Radio 4 on Wednesdays at 6:30. And also related to the US election is Matt Fry's got a show on LBC now on Saturday mornings. And it's really good to have. I've never heard him on the radio before. And I like his voice. I like to think he tells his kids to finish their breakfast in that same voice. So Matt Fry's on LBC. And just heading a little bit further afield, I wanted to mention Kira Kelly, who's on News Talk FM in Dublin, which you may not have heard. And this is a new show about health and well-being. And she's a fabulously energetic broadcaster for a Sunday morning. She had Brian Kennedy, the singer, on a couple of weeks ago, who's been fighting cancer, which may sound like a bit of a bleak listen for Sunday morning, but it was 20 minutes of really inspiring and uplifting radio. And she's a terrifically energetic broadcaster for a Sunday morning, and that's Kira Kelly's Alive and Kicking on News Talk FM in Dublin on Sunday mornings. And I must mention also quickly Paperback Writers back on Six Music, also on Sundays. Mark Atwood's been on this series so far, David Mitchell, and next week Zadie Smith. And that's a really good show, 1 o'clock on Six Music on Sundays.
I just wanted to say, in terms of listening to things, I don't know whether it's me getting older or whether radio drama is actually getting better, but I'm hearing some better radio drama than I used to. There was a thing on Radio 4 quite recently I only just caught up on, starring Romola Garai, called Tracks, which was a 9-part radio drama with lots of sound and just texture. And it didn't feel acted in the way that a lot of, you know, old-fashioned and now let's turn over the script kind of radio drama used to sound like.
Interesting you should say that. So, bit of a plug. So on Fun Kids, we've just put on an American podcast we've chopped up into parts. So the podcast is a kids' drama called The Unexplainable Disappearance of Mars Patel. Someone just sent it in saying, would you be interested in putting this on, and we get a lot of that, and then most of it's rubbish. And I listened, and it was a really fascinating listen. All kids' voices are doing all the main parts, and so we've kind of serialised it. But I think, again, democratisation of the medium, more people can make things and distribute things, people with different views, people with a different take on the world. And these guys have clearly coached these children to deliver great performances, but they're not encumbered by having listened to what a radio drama should sound like. But I think, you know, I think you're absolutely right that it's moved away from hearing that binatone phone ring that's in every Radio 4 drama.
I think there's a generation of producers who are coming from working in young experimental modern theatre on stage, who are now thinking, well, what could we do on radio? How could that translate? And they're not used to making the sort of drama that you talked about just now, and actually they're thinking about how can we translate what we're doing on stage to a different medium, and I think that's making the difference.
More promise for the future. All very positive. Matt Deegan, thank you. Brett Spencer, thank you as well for debuting on the Radio Today Roundtable. It is the normal podcast as usual, though. So let's have the news now with Stuart Clarkson.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor. And Rock Radio is making a comeback to 96.3 FM in Glasgow and West Central Scotland. Ofcom's awarded the licence for the area to a team involving former Rock Radio staff, and their application beat others from Bauer, Original and Go to the licence. It's the old Q96 Paisley licence that later became Rock Radio, then XFM, before Global handed it back last September. James Whale has signed for a weekday evening show on Talk Radio, replacing Johnny Gould, Monday to Thursday, 7 till 10. The former TalkSport, LBC and Radio Air presenter left BBC Essex in September after his appearance on Celebrity Big Brother. Ofcom's asking for views on future licensing for community radio. The regulator says it might run a fourth round of licensing for the sector if there's demand from stations. Ofcom also says licensing for more small-scale DAB services could start in 2018. The BBC's announced an 8-day pop-up digital station for the run-up to St Andrew's Day at the end of the month. BBC Radio Scotland Music Extra will showcase lots of genres of Scottish music, with presenters including former Smooth Radio host Jenny Farish, as well as Brian Burnett and Sanjeev Kohli. Call Collymore is making a comeback. Former footballer Stan Collymore left TalkSport after 8 years in the summer. His phone-in show is going to be aired by XS Manchester on Saturday and Sunday evenings. Online at radiotoday.co.uk, you can see all the nominations for the Audio Production Awards out this week and catch up on all the headlines from the Q3 2016 RAJAR figures. But that's the latest from Radio Today. I'm Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Stuart. This is the Radio Today podcast, the Radio Today programme. Brett Spencer's still here and wants to plug something, and he can do it after this.
Phone calls, social media, SMS, email, codec control and visualisation through the same interface. Phone box from Broadcast Bionics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Brett Spencer's plug.
I just wanted to mention the Asian Network Comedy Night, which I have been working on. This is a series of events we've been taking around the country, actually, to bring Asian comedy to new audiences. It's helping bring new audiences to the network, and we're using it to promote, you know, new Asian comedians. And our most recent show, which we recorded at the Leicester Curve, is now available on the BBC iPlayer, so check that out. It's got some really great acts on it. Dame Baptiste, who you may have heard of, and Paul Sinha among the lineup, and that's on iPlayer for the next month, the Asian Network Comedy Night.
And slightly connected to that, last week's Radio Today programme, the interview with Nihal. Thank you to everybody who got in touch and said that they'd enjoyed that, because I enjoyed doing it too. I also enjoyed going to the House of Commons the other week for the launch of Radio Centre's latest brochure called Action Stations. Also there was Radio Centre's chief exec, Siobhan Kenny. So, Siobhan, how do you think it went today?
I think it's been a terrific reception, actually, Trevor. We've had a lot of MPs in. Obviously, they come in for a short amount of time. But, you know, we've got a lot of MPs, a lot of people from stations. So great turnout, really. And considering we've got the BBC Charter debate going on at the same time, that's not bad.
You've done one of these booklets before, haven't you? In fact, I think it was published just after you'd started.
So, 2 years on,
what's the story about commercial radio and public service?
Well, I guess we've moved on quite a lot since then, just in telling our story as much as anything else. So if you look at Action Stations, it really is full of these tremendous things that local radio actually does in its local communities up and down the country. 13.5 hours a week of public service content, so that's travel, news, charities, 25 million a year for that. And I mean, we've got here today the Bay Radio, haven't we, who won so many plaudits for their coverage of what happened in the Cumbria floods. They were broadcasting on an emergency generator, and at one point during the night were the only point of reference for all of those people there. So I think that's the kind of thing commercial radio does really well.
Of course, at the same time that you're talking about being local and saying how important that is, you're also asking the government to let you share more and to do more programming from outside of a region. How do you square that, Siobhan?
Well, I think that's easy to explain with the way technology now works. I can see that it seems like a bit of an anomaly, but actually, rather than forcing people to locate people, let's say, in Cheltenham and Bristol, there's no reason why you can't have an office in Bristol, but local journalists placed in different... So you still get local content, you still get the feeling of what's going there, but you don't actually physically have to have an office there anymore. And that's what I think technology can now deliver, that it really couldn't when this legislation came in 1990, pre-internet. So
what else, as the radio centre, are you asking the government for? I know Matt Hancock isn't here, but you've talked in your remarks about how you've got a debate going on with him. What are you trying to achieve next?
Well, I think as well as the local content, which you've just discussed, I think there's formats as well. So in a world where we've got competitors such as Spotify, Google, Apple, it seems quite anomalous to me that the government is still dictating what kind of music the good people of Lincolnshire will listen to between 7 and 9 in the morning. I don't think that's necessary anymore. So I think we could let go the reins on some of those things. I also think that obviously we've had the BBC Charter debate just going on right now. We were very pleased to see that the government listened to some of our arguments on distinctiveness. I think it's easy to caricature what we're saying in this aspect. Much of what BBC Radio does is absolutely superb, and we would not compete with that, nor could we. There are some parts of what they do in peak times during the day, let's say on Radios 1 and Radio 2, where their output is pretty similar to what's available in the commercial sector. And I don't really think that's good for the listener, to be honest. I think they need to have more choice.
I was interested to hear you talk warmly about the BBC, as well as saying that you've got some fights to have with them. Where do you stand at the moment with community radio?
Community radio I'm also very interested in, Trevor, because I think they do something that is quite different from what we do. Necessarily, it has to be. And actually, I've had a lot of interesting conversations with them recently, because I think there's more we can do in partnership with them. So that's where I'm going with that, really. I think that they do, just as I'm talking about local radio, commercial radio, producing lots of content that is so valuable for local communities, I think they do as well. So I think we do well to partner up with them when we can, but also to actually point out to Ofcom when they're in contravention of their licence, which does happen a bit, I'm afraid.
Siobhan Kenny, thank you.
Thank you, Trevor.
Siobhan Kenny at the House of Commons. Shall we have some radio moments, Matt?
Yes.
David Lloyd, Radio Moments.
It's 4 years this week since the BBC London management bit their fingernails.
Hey, Dan.
Very good afternoon, everybody. As you may have heard, this show has been cancelled by the BBC. This may be the last one we ever do, but let's look past that. Maybe they'll... I found out... Nobody from the station rang me. I found out in a conversation.
Yeah. I appreciate you phoning me to tell me,
Dan.
Yeah,
I told you. I rang you, Balin. But no jokes. This show has been cancelled. Not joking. Yeah, and, there's... Don't worry, I've let them know. But anyway, so let us, while we can, just huddle together like cavemen outside, sheltering for warmth. But, the BBC have cancelled the show for financial reasons. And so,
don't worry,
we'll keep you right across any drain blockages over there. And see, here's the thing about this show. As much as, kind of the local reporting has its place and all of that, that's all a lot of people know. And they think that brings Londoners together. They have no idea what this show does for Londoners. And it's not about, we'll keep you across...
Danny Baker opening his heart on BBC London this week in 2012. This week, 7 years ago, Jimmy Savile died. And isn't it strange to reflect now how his death was observed at the time?
Sir Jimmy Savile, one of the most colourful figures in popular entertainment over the past 50 years, has died. He was 84. Jimmy Savile claimed to have run the first disco in Leeds in the 1940s. He became a radio DJ and then a television presenter on Top of the Pops and Jim'll Fix It. Alongside his broadcasting career, he devoted his energies to fundraising for charity, most notably for the Spinal Injuries Unit at Stoke Mandeville Hospital in Buckinghamshire. His catchphrases, such as now then, and how's about that then, endeared him to his many fans and were a gift for Impressionists. Our correspondent Nick Higham looks back at his life.
With his gold medallion, enormous cigar...
What more can you say, and how fascinating it is now to listen back to that coverage in its entirety. Happy birthday this week to one of commercial radio's most famous voices.
News on the hour from LBC, home of independent radio news.
It's 9 o'clock. This is Douglas Cameron. Political leaders in Ulster expect an announcement of direct rule from Westminster. Striking loyalists in the province relax their grip, but are keeping the situation...
Douglas Cameron, 83 this week, and wasn't it great to hear him reappear on LBC's 40th anniversary, sounding as good as ever.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning, I'm Douglas Cameron. Thousands of people will be able to apply for 95% mortgages from state-owned banks today. Royal Bank of Scotland...
He just slid back into it, didn't he? Almost 40 years between those bits of audio. Happy birthday, Douglas. Down the road at Capital, one of its most famous voices died this week 27 years ago.
Wasn't that nice? Harvey and the Moonglows, Ten Commandments of Love and Stardust from Billy Ward and the Dominoes. This is Cruising, back in a minute.
Going to the Ideal Home Exhibition? Then be sure to see Rumbler's tremendous displays of domestic appliances.
Cruising, the original version of Little Darling with the Gladiolus from June 57, Stranded in the Jungle, the Cadets, and Drip Drop, the Drifters in 1958. What about Chuck? What about Jerry Lee? What about the Everlys? Be patient. Back in just a minute.
Roger Scott, who died this week in 89. In Roger's day, Capital was but a single radio station, but it split into two this week 28 years ago.
And it's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock on the 30... Oh, sorry, wrong DJ. That was the Rolling Stones, and it's all right now, folks. I'm here. But we're not going to stay here for long. We're going over to Moscow now.
Happy anniversary to Capital Gold, launching this week in 88. With all this talk of the BBC licence being needed for iPlayer, let's remember that this week, 94 years ago, the licence fee was introduced for the reception of radio. It cost 10 shillings, but it was half price if you used a BBC-branded set, because the companies which formed the then British Broadcasting Company manufactured them. One famous radio story occurred this week in 1938. A dramatisation of War of the Worlds was aired in America on the Columbia Network. It was directed and presented by Orson Welles and was so realistic that listeners thought it really was true.
We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Ladies and gentlemen, am I on? Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. The more state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who.
We are deeply shocked and deeply regretful about the results of last night's broadcast. The date of the broadcast, was 1939, and it seemed, came rather as a great surprise to us that a story, fine H.G. Wells classic fantasy, the original for so many succeeding comic strips and adventure stories and novels about a mythical invasion by monsters from the planet Mars, should have had so profound an effect upon radio listeners.
The War of the Worlds controversy this week, 78 years ago. I think we'd kill for a PR story like that now. Mind you, the BBC Trust will be calling for heads by the end of the day. So with the first Hancock's Half Hour, 62 years ago.
So let's go over to Tony's flat in the English Quarter of London's West End, where he and Bill Kerr are making the arrangements.
The launch of BBC Oxford, 46 years ago.
And now, I believe I shall become the first Lord Mayor to usurp the role of a disc jockey.
The first bells broadcast on radio 91 years ago.
It was a nice buffer between programmes.
BBC Asia Network launched on BBC WM and BBC Leicester 28 years ago.
This is the British Asian Sound.
And the launch of BBC News Online 19 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Thank you, David. Thanks also this week to Matt Deegan and to Brett Spencer, who are our Radio Today Roundtable panellists. Thanks to Hayley Hayes, researcher and panel operator this week. Next week, we'll be in Warsaw to meet the managing director of Talk FM, the leading talk station in Poland. And before we go, I did promise you some jazz, didn't I? So here it is.